Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I am welcoming author Tyler Page. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, I'm really excited to be here.
Tyler Page is an Amazon top three best-selling author of what her readers have lovingly labeled horror. Tyler is proof that horror doesn't have to be serious to be effective. It can be self-aware, playful, and at times romantic, while telling a solid scary story and blending her passions for both romance and horror. She's not only creating something that's both risque and bloody, she's bridging the gap between the hopelessly romantic and the hopelessly haunted. So before we talk Good for Her, which is your upcoming release, we're going to get to know you a little bit. So what initially drew you to romance as a whole, as a writer?
I think I've always meant to write romance. I started writing when I was an early tween, and I don't think I've ever written a single story that wasn't a romance.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how much I tried to write any sort of other genre, there was always a romance subplot. So I think just in my heart, I was just meant to write it, and I just
So
leaned in.
I assume you probably started reading it way before you probably should have been too.
Oh yeah. I was reading V.C. Andrews when I was in the fifth grade, which they aren't romances, but they are, they have some type of romantic plot, kind of. I don't know if you've ever read a V.C. Andrews.
I have, but it has been a long time.
Yeah, it's there's something.
They are something. So why horror romance though?
So I actually didn't realize it was a thing until about 2023. And I had been publishing since 2018, and my books were just going nowhere. I had had several editors at this point, and reviews from readers, and every note that I got was almost the same thing, that this is too dark for a contemporary romance. You need to switch things out, you need to do this and that. And I'm like, at the time, dark romance was just starting out, so it wasn't really a thing when I started writing. So then I was like, slow. I was like, okay, dark romance started to come out, and I was like, okay, so people do like it. You just got to find your readers.
Right.
And then I started doing some deeper dives into Amazon, and I discovered the genre, an Amazon category. Not it was erotic horror, and it clicked in my head. I was like, oh my gosh, I can do that. Because I still am. I'm a huge horror fan in movies and books in general. But I also know romance.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't know that was a thing. If that's a thing, I can do that.
Yeah.
And that's basically how my career restarted.
So it's one of those things, dark romance has always kind of been there, but it's been in the periphery. And you're right, in the past 5, 6 years is when it's really started to push to the forefront. Because honestly, you can't throw a stone without hitting a dark romance anymore.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was definitely always there. Anne Rice, comes to mind.
Yeah.
But it was a giant boom happened.
So when you're writing, do you plan out your stories or do you pants?
It's a little bit of both. I do like to have an outline. That's actually what I'm doing today after this. I do like to have a very rough outline of just kind of a sentence or two of what's going to happen in that chapter. And then I just try to go through as much of the book as possible. But when I start writing, if those things deviate, I fully let them happen. And then I just go back to my outline and rework the outline to fit the new words. Well, so I play a little bit in both fields.
Because I've read a few of your books and they're really complex, chaotic in the best way, but complex. And so it's one of those things where it's interesting. And I tell authors this all the time, how much I love these interviews, because it's interesting to see everybody's process. Because when you're reading your book, it's how does this just coming to her? Is it Is it something that she has planned out? Because I have talked to authors where they like do full complete outlines before they even write the first word. And but there's so many intricacies in the way that you tell the story, especially because oftentimes there's murdery things happening. And it's like, how do you keep them all straight to make sure like who's murdering who and when they're murdering them and like how they're murdered?
It is really hard. Thankfully, with my, indie horror romance, my Final Girl series, those were meant to be very meta and very almost a parody of classic slasher movies. So I was able to get a, like sometimes, especially like in the my third book in that series, Knife Comet Share, there, is like an unnamed character that runs around with a chainsaw in one chapter, and we never see who that is later. It was kind of unintentional because I forgot about that character and I just never went back. But also because of the how it, the job that was very specific genre, how it was meant to be written, it works because that is how horror films are. They sometimes they're just terrible, terrible writing, and that's okay.
Well, and but I think that's one of like the cult following type things, because it's like you figure some of the biggest cult followings on horror films are the worst films. Like, they're so bad, but they're so good at the same time. And I will admit, I watched horror and things like that when I was younger. Like now, like I can't watch them. Like I freak out. Like I am not in the headspace. My husband likes to watch them, but I can't. But so have you ever heard of it was a Clint Howard movie, and he was the ice cream man. He drove
Heard.
around like he was an ice cream man, but he would kill people.
I may have seen it because I watch a
It's
lot of
an
movies.
old one. It is probably from the early 90s because I watched it as a kid. But yeah, but it was so cheesy but delightful at the same time. And I just, it's one of those things where it's like, it was not a good movie at all, but we just really loved it.
Yes, but with my final girls, that was fully the intent, and that's how I wanted to leave my readers feeling is like, oh, this is kind of rough, like with a, as far as stuff doesn't make sense, but it's all intentional.
But it makes
And
sense
that's
at the same
okay.
time.
It does. If it's intentionally done, which after like I had caught the like the Chainsaw Man halfway through writing the book, so I had the opportunity to fix it. But I was
But you're
like,
like, nope, I'm gonna leave it
no,
go.
I actually kind of think that's funny, so I'm gonna leave it back. I'm gonna leave it in. Yeah, if you're doing it intentionally, that's a lot different. And it makes the experience a lot better for the reader too.
Can you share any writing rituals or habits that you have to help you stay focused when you're writing?
I do listen to a lot of music. As far as staying focused, I have ADHD. It's a little rough. But I recently bought the Brick. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's like the new thing. Well, I mean, they've had them on your phone forever, but I bought the official Brick thing recently. And when I use it, it is wonderful. It works wonders. So if you're struggling to stay focused, and you have, a little bit of free money, because I wouldn't say it's necessary, but if you want to splurge, get the Brick.
Well, it's funny because there's a lot of authors who are like, I have ADHD and this is being brought to you by my meds and like different things like that. And it's like, but everybody has different processes. Like Nevessa Allen, she talks about how she has really like severe ADHD and she does much better. She does the Pomodoro method, which is basically sprints. It's like
Oh, yeah.
30 to 45 minutes, like where you like basically shut yourself off and like you like you're hyper focused essentially, but then you like, but it's only a short timeline because that's like when the synapses like stop working. So it's just it's fascinating because again, there's a lot of authors with ADHD.
Oh, yeah, and I don't I'm just kind of I don't medicate or anything, so it's real rough over here sometimes.
I'm sure.
I'm doing my best though.
So how do you balance the romantic relationship storyline with the other elements of the story?
Yeah, so I really love saying horror romance very specifically because I do think that it my stories are I try to do a 50-50 blend. Both have to drive the story forward. It's not specifically romance. Like if you took out the romance, it would still be a horror story. If you st took out the horror, it'd still be a romance story. So I do try to like follow those beats, like classic romance beats as I go along. I lost my train of thought, but I
That's
think I
okay.
answered your question. I think so.
You
No?
did. It was fine.
Okay.
Train of thought loss is a normal thing in our world. I mean, you know, Becky. So, do you have a favorite trope to read or write about? Because your books aren't super tropey, I will say that. Like, there's always like a baseline trope in them, but overall, like, you don't have it. But do you have one that you really enjoy?
I do. Well, actually, the umbrella one is love triangle, but I'm also very, very niche. I like cheating romances.
I never used to like them, but I, for some reason, I can't get enough of them anymore.
I almost exclusively read cheating romances, but it's very specific because I real like I'll read like if it's cheating or love triangle, I'll most likely read it. But like what gets me like really 5-star read for me is when, because it's usually I like the two men and one woman, when both men are like when she worth I don't want to say worthwhile, but like, and with reading dark romance too, it's I don't want to say good, but like they both have merit as to why she should be with them. Because like for instance, I always go back to Twilight. They tried to pitch it as a love triangle, but you always knew at the end she was gonna pick Edward. I like the ones where you really don't know which one she would pick, and they both have reasons for why she should. You know, like yeah, those I don't read very many books a year because I exclusively read cheating romances.
It's funny you bring up the Twilight thing because I came across a Robert Pattinson interview and he was like, there was never really a teen Jacob. That was just like media.
Yep, I saw that just the other day. Yeah, it was they were just hyping it up. Everyone knew that she was going to pick Edward in the
I
end.
know, seriously. Okay, so let's talk Good for Her. So it comes out April 28th, 2026. This is your first trad release, so it's very exciting. Let me tell you, this cover though is phenomenal, and those edges, hot damn.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that I was getting edges. So that was really exciting when I saw it. And the cover, it's so different from what I'm used to as far as my indie work goes. It was definitely an adjustment having to get used to it, but I actually my iPad right now is being propped up by a paperback of Good for Her. It's so like I just can't stop staring at it now for like the last almost year now because I've had the cover for since like May. It's just, yeah, I'm obsessed with it.
It's so pretty and the colors are so like vibrant, and I think it just works really well, like as you read the story and like you go back to the cover and like the vibrance of it and like not chaos of it, but like the deepness of like the burgundy of the background and all these things. I just think it fits the story so well.
Yeah, no, they did really good over there. And my publisher, they one of the things that I just really appreciate is that they let me have quite a bit of requests as far as back and forth goes. That's not always
Yeah,
the case
that's
for publishers,
right.
but they really, especially for the second book as well, in my deal, they really just let me keep nitpicking until I was happy, and I'm no regrets because that co the covers are beautiful.
So let's talk Good for Her. So this is a story, Sebastian and Evie. It's second chance. There's a li like there's some heartache, some big things happen, and we Evie is returning to Hollywood after a few years. Her mother had been killed on set of a movie. I'm not spoiling anything. That's a known thing,
Yeah, I
people.
was gonna say that's like the blurb.
But so she is coming back to avenge and revenge And it's a little dark, a little dingy, a little bloody. So where did you get this idea from?
So the idea literally it sparked out of one very small thing. Me and my husband, one of my favorite things to do, like when we get the opportunity, like for a date, is to go to the movie theater and just spend the entire day going to movies.
Oh,
We leave
really?
one theater and we go to the next one, like just whatever's playing. And we happened to have the opportunity to do that once. And we caught Maxine. I don't, you said you don't watch horror movies,
I
so
don't, but I keep track of them, so.
So yeah, we caught the movie Maxine the day it opened. We didn't even
Okay.
realize it was opening, and that entire series is one of my favorites, and Maxine ended up being amazing. My favorite one in that series. But there's a scene in that movie where she's running through like the Hollywood set, and you're seeing like all the famous, the infamous things that when you think of like Hollywood set, you think of like Jaws and all the, I'm trying to think. It's like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like the old cowboy, the Western sets and stuff like that. And she passes by the Bates Motel and the Psycho House. And she goes inside for one brief moment, and you see that it's like, it's not actually a house, but it's like just all wood inside because it's just a set. You know, you don't really go inside; you go on, you see the outside. And I saw her do that in that movie, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome! I never really thought about the fact that they're not actual, sets that you can go inside. And then my romance brain was like, and I'm going to be vulgar for a minute, but I was like, what
That's
if two people, banged in there? And spoiler, that's what happens in the in Good for Her. They have that moment, and that's what sparked the entire book. I framed it around wanting to write that scene.
But that's just such a small piece of like the overall story.
It is. Well, I listen to a lot of movie podcasts, or horror movie podcasts, but also one of my favorite ones, she the host, she lives in California. She's got like a degree in film, so it's like she talks about her experience in the industry quite a bit. So I listen to a lot of podcasts specifically about stuff like that. So I kind of already I felt like I was familiar enough with that kind of world that I wanted to just kind of write around it. But there were also just like little pieces of things that I just really loved. So you've read the book in full,
I
you
have,
said?
yes, I have.
Okay. So one of the characters that that's on Evie and Sebastian's list was completely taken from The Righteous Gemstones, if you've watched that show.
I actually don't watch a lot of TV or anything, but I research a lot of stuff just, and I like to read like the, I will read like just like show like things where it's like I saw so know an entire show without watching any of
Oh, I
it.
do that for movies a lot. If I'm like too scared to watch it, because I don't really do like Saw, but I like the plot, so I'll read the, go through
Yeah,
and read
like
the entire.
I'll go through like IMDb and read like episode like the detailed episode things. It's like I have no plans on ever watching this, but I will read an into like about an entire show.
Exactly. But one of the people on Evie and Sebastian's list was taken from The Righteous Gemstones. If any of the listeners hear it, Uncle Baby Billy. And if you've seen the show, when you read the book, you're gonna be like, oh, I know exactly which one she's talking about.
I'll have to do
Yeah,
some
so
more. I'll do some more digging because now I'm curious to see. But so the book itself, like it definitely shows like the nefarious side of Hollywood because I mean, as we have learned through like the Me Too movement and a lot of things, like I mean, I think it's always been there, but a lot of this like style of thing has come out, which I don't want to spoil that side of it, but it shows like the back and the bad side of Hollywood.
I really leaned into that a lot for Sebastian more than Evie, because Evie, she was the daughter of an actress. She wasn't actually an actress until, the book. But Eve or Sebastian stayed in Hollywood, so he really got to, unfortunately, experience a lot of the
Underbelly,
awful.
so to speak. Well, in their story, so they were together at the beginning of the book, and then when all of the things happened with her mom, they broke up, they went their separate ways. We find out a little bit more of like what happened there and how it happened and all those things. Again, trying not to like spoil anything and be super vague, but not vague at the same time. But as they come back together, like there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot, but there's still a lot of care. But one thing I really enjoyed about these two is they basically spoke in another language. Like it was all like reference to other movies and situations and things like that. And they said their feelings in like certain ways. And it was really interesting. What was the decision to do that?
Yes, so that originally started out as oh my gosh, I was Morse code. It started out as Morse code, and I sent it to Becky and my agent Heather, and they were like, "We really like the story. The Morse code's a bit much because the readers, they would have to,
Look it
I would
up.
either have to like write it, I would have to teach them, and I wasn't." Even and I did my own due diligence trying to learn Morse code, but like I don't know if I would get it, absolutely correct. So I was like, okay, well, let me consider something else. Let me, play with it for a little bit. And then I was on TikTok one day, and again, because my life is just nothing but horror, I was watching a video on like horror movie fun facts, and they were talking about the movie It, and they said, whenever you hear them say beep, beep, Richie, it means shut up. They're telling Richie to shut up. And it was just like a light bulb went off. And that's why that's what I start the book with, because of that. I was like, oh my gosh, what if we turn the Morse code into movie quotes? And honestly, it's one of my favorite parts of the entire book. I wasn't sure if they would let, be interested in that, but no, it turned out,
No, I think it really worked because it gives them this like significant language that is just theirs. And because they too like have this love for those style of movies, and that is a big part of their relationship and how it progresses. And even when they were younger, like just being on set and doing those types of things. But I thought it worked really well. I thought it was really interesting and intriguing. And I hadn't read a book that used that style of connection before. I thought it was, and it was like they could emote in a way that, because both of them, like they have a hard time with feelings, and both of them, like, but it gives them this validity to like the way that they can have feelings but protect themselves at the same time.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I'm just like thinking about
I know if you guys could
it.
see Tyler's face right now, she has that like dreamy look, like, oh.
Yeah.
But it
They're
had to
so
be
cute.
something like where you like when you had that realization, like this is gonna be like how I'm gonna do this, like that aha moment.
Yeah, it was definitely when I saw the video and was like, oh my gosh, I can do that, but on a larger scale, because I just loved that so much.
Well, and we have these side characters. We have like the list, so to speak, of the people that Evie is out to get. But we learn that Sebastian kind of has a little list of himself, and he is making strides to do things. And so they essentially team up, which, I mean, that's not a spoiler either, people. But then we have like Bryce and Skye, Skye is part of the movie. And there's some things that happened there, but she ends up being like, at first I was like, oh no, how is it going to be a triangle? Are we going to have that? Because like, where is that going to go? But then things happen and we find out that no, it's not going to happen that way. But it just, her character was just, it was, she was so fun, which I wasn't anticipating that.
Yeah, so again, that was another one that was completely intentional, because so many we see in media all the time, whether it's in books or movies, that they pit women against women.
Oh yeah.
And I really try not to do that where I can, because we have so much of it as it is. So it was just kind of almost a commentary on what you think is good. We're not going to do that here. We're.
Well, and there's so many questions too. Like when you see people on the red carpet after a movie comes out, like whether, like when a lot of times, like co-stars will be in a relationship and then it's like they break up not long after. And it's like, so you do start to question, was this a PR thing? Were they actually together? Was it just like a forced proximity type of thing where they just like had that moment? But, and so like, with this, like we do have Sebastian and Evie, like they're coming together, but there is kind of that fake relationship, like part of it, like also built on everything else. And that's one thing with these books is there's so many pieces. Like, how do you keep it all straight?
Well, usually I don't, which is why.
Which is why you have random men with chainsaws.
Yes. But with switching over to trad, well, two things. Switching over to trad, my editor was very, we did probably about 10 rounds of edits, to be honest. But also, I wanted to step away from that silliness of my final girls. I wanted to be, this is my first horror romance that is not
Campy.
a reimagining, or like it this is completely original. Well, I don't want to say my other stuff isn't original work, but
No,
those
I
ones
know
are,
what you mean, though.
there is this is 100% from me, inspired by me and no one else. So there was a lot of note taking. Oh my gosh, you just asked how I keep things straight, and I totally lost my train of thought there.
Well, clearly you don't, but it works out. See, this is why like a good editor is worth their weight in gold.
Yes, and don't get me wrong, my indie editor is wonderful. I will never say a bad thing about her. We're about to go into edits, for my la hopefully last indie work. But it's just a different experience. It's, we go into those books, and I'm like, this is what I would like to see from these books. Don't worry about some of that silly stuff. It's okay to leave it in there for good for her. And my other horror romance that's going to be with my publisher, we went in going, okay, we're actually going to not have all of these loose strings everywhere, and she, oh my gosh, she knocked it out of the park.
Well, and that's the thing. There's a different mindset in the way in which you approach the books. Like indie, like it's a whole new world for some people when they go into the trad space.
Yeah, it was definitely a shock to my system when I got my very first round of trad edits. They were brutal, very, very brutal. It took a long time, but the second time, because I have two books with my publisher, the second time I came in for first edits for the second book, it was not nearly as bad,
Well,
but it was
because you kind
definitely
of
a
knew what to
shock.
expect.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. So Sebastian's storyline, it's like Evie, like we know that she went through her trauma. Like we understand like her hurt, we understand her revenge, but Sebastian's storyline, like he it's a rough go for him. Like as we find out, like some of the things that he's done and gone through and the people he's been exposed to, like it's a very traumatic life that he has lived.
Yeah. Well, he started off as a child star, and I really, really wanted to, I was
Lean into
inspired by a
that.
lean into that. Yeah, I was very inspired by hearing, real celebrities talk about their experiences and how nothing in Hollywood is, what they try to paint.
Well, there's so much secrecy and negativity and bad, for like the lack of a better term.
Yeah, and I don't even. There's really not much you could say. Yes, there is. It's honestly horrifying, when you really hear those stories. I mean, what is it? Drew Barrymore went to rehab at 13. for example. Like, it's just terrible.
Yeah, it is terrifying. And it's like anybody who has like a kid who wants to do that, I'm like, I don't know if I could ever support that as a parent.
Oh yeah, like I really struggle seeing children actors now, because it's just like, well, you at this point you know what people have gone through, so it's a little, I will say I'm a little judgmental when I see people doing it now. I'm like, you should know better by now.
So Sebastian and Evie, they are chaos. They are connected. They have this second chance that Evie is not sure if she truly wants it, because she wants to be closed off, but she's not at the same time. Was it hard to write her character like that, or did it come fairly easily?
I would say Evie came pretty easily. I don't really feel like Evie has that as many layers as Sebastian does. I think, she's just very A, point A to point B. She wants, she knows what she wants, and then she just wants to be done with it.
Well, and she kind of like bulldozes over people to get there too. So if there was a piece of advice present author you could give past author you, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. Just keep going. Write the book. I mean, I'm very transparent on social media and tell people all the time. I published 13 books that flopped before I had my first breakout book. And I'm very grateful for those books, because along the way, I learned how to react. Either, publicly or, privately, when a book is not successful, when readers are not so nice, it give, a lot of people, they get really discouraged when their first book is not a hit, and they don't know how to react to that. We see so many people, especially, on threads nowadays, where they get caught up, and they, unfortunately, they need a PR person,
Yeah, threads is the we like to refer to it as the Wild Wild West.
Oh yeah, no, for real. But I really do think that, my experience in writing those flops helped me grow, so that when I had the when I finally did have a breakout book, I knew how to respond correctly to it. And I mean, fingers crossed, so far so good. I haven't been canceled. So I just say, just write the book, publish the book, and it's okay if
If
it
it doesn't
doesn't,
do over here.
you just write the next one and it'll be fine.
Well, and anytime, like when Becky and I, like when we're talking to authors who are newer on the scene or writing that first book, it's like everybody starts at the bottom. It is very rare
Yes.
for that first book or even that second book to really catapult you. Like those are anomalies in this world. Like the first book, just be prepared. Like it may not do as good as you hope, but it is, but that does not mean it won't do good in the future.
Exactly. And personally, having, done 13 books, I wouldn't want to have a breakout book in the first time. I would not. Just because I don't think I would know how to respond to the public with it. Like, I needed this growth period. I needed that 5 years to figure things out.
So what's next for you?
So I do have a two-book deal with Page and Vine. So I am publishing another book with them. It is a complete standalone, so it has nothing to do with Good for Her. That'll be in the fall. I am also doing the sequel to my best-selling indie title, Slasher Pass 2. That'll come sometime in the summer. And then after that, I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about yet.
I don't think you're
Becky
really allowed
knows.
to. Yeah, and I don't think you're allowed to talk about anything right now.
No, not really. Which is like an awesome thing to be able to say. But Becky knows what's going on. But other than that, that's all people are allowed to
So things are in the
speak.
works, but
Yes.
we're waiting to see what those things are.
We keep it, my agent and my publisher, they keep me very tight-lipped over there.
Well, thank you, Tyler, for taking time out of your morning to sit and chat with me and talk about all the authory things and Good For Her.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I love talking about Good For Her, especially now that it's coming out really soon, so.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.